All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Strength Academy podcast. Grayson here, joined by Mundo.
What's up, y'all?
And we are back and up one weight class from Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So I hope you all had a wonderful holiday.
Living large.
Got to spend some time with your friends and family, eating too much, seeing how many pecan pies you can fit in your mouth, all of the fun stuff that comes along with food-related holidays. As lifters, I think we all have a special place for feasting related activities. So hopefully everybody ate well, got to put that energy into their training.
Yeah, unfortunately I didn't. I was sick. I had a really bad cold that kept me down for 2 days. So I didn't even go see my family. I just sat in the dark and drank NyQuil until I passed out. And then just slept throughout the whole day. So I didn't even get to enjoy Thanksgiving.
Just robo-tripping with your cat on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that was it.
So we're going to be off next week, guys. We've got the American Open Finals. We'll be heading out to Salt Lake City with Tyler and Dee and Consuelo. And so we'll have to do a full recap show when we get back from that. So no episode next week. So keep posted for the recap there. But we figured we'd kind of go through this AO Finals start list and talk about maybe some of the sessions we're excited to watch, because of course it's a given that we are most excited for the sessions our athletes are in.
Oh yeah, of course.
We have the most riding there. But is there any let's go through the men first. Are there any sessions that you're really excited to try to watch?
Well, I think we're going to miss some of the lighter weight classes because they go on Friday and we're not going to be in Salt Lake until Friday. And I kind of was interested in the 73s because that's the weight class I'm in. I like to see like what the numbers that the guys in my weight class are putting up. So Alex Lee is one of my favorite lifters to watch. And so he's in the 73 category this year. And I was excited to watch him. Hopefully, if we get there in time, we might be able to watch one of those the 73A sessions. And
he's got another guy. He's entered at a 295. And Jerome Smith from Lift for Life has entered at a 290. So
yeah, I've never heard of Jerome Smith. So, but it might be close.
Two people going back and forth in that category that will be pretty fun.
Alvin Tajima from Marin Heavy Athletics. I've heard of him before. I think I've seen him at another meet. He usually lifts pretty well. Greg Cook is from Texas Barbell Club, and I've seen him lift before, and he's pretty good too. So they're all a little bit lower entry totals than Alex Lee and Jerome Smith, but still pretty close up there. I think that'll be a pretty good session overall. The 81s, obviously I'm interested in the 81s because we have a lifter in that one. Tyler is going to be in that one. And so far in the stack is according to the way it's listed out now by total. He's sitting somewhere within the top 10, but I do remember a few names. Troy Fries, from Renaissance Periodization. I know him, not personally, but I've seen him lift before and things like that. Let's see, who else? I think the 89s is going to be a really good session. There's going to be Robert Blackwell from Cal Strength. There's going to be John Downey from the Academy of Weightlifting and James Townsend from Team Juggernaut. And they're all listed within, you know, 10, 20 kilos of each other. So that'll be a good session to watch. I think there'll be some pretty good lifts in that session being made.
Yeah, it's looking like as far as, so over 315 totals, there's five athletes with over 315. Highest entry total is Blackwell at 340. So hopefully that's going to be a bit of a show. I really like, it's always cool to see what people are, there's a lot of heavy hitters in the session. So 89 kilos, definitely.
Yeah, 89's a good one. 96, I'm kind of interested in too, because there's three names that I know pretty well. And that's Jason Bonick, David Garcia, and Phil Sabatini. Jason Bonick is from Team Divergent. David Garcia is from Team Juggernaut. And Phil Sabatini is from East Coast Gold weightlifting team. And I've seen all three of these guys lift before, and they all put up great numbers. They're usually pretty consistent. And it looks like they're obviously in the top five, probably vying for medal spots, along with Justin Mayer from Team Montana and Trevor Succi.
Yeah, I think that's how you say it.
From Alex Lee Athletics. And I think that's going to be a good session, too. The 96s are going to be a pretty good session.
Yeah, I haven't seen David Garcia lift in a while. It's good to see him back.
Yeah, he had some kind of injury prior to,
I believe, he was rehabbing something. Yeah. At 102, D'Angelo Osorio will be back in the swing of things. as well as Addison Jones. Addison's one to watch. He's incredibly, incredibly strong. He was one of the last athletes Glenn Pendley was coaching in person.
Oh, really? Okay.
And he was living out in Kansas, and he's from Mississippi Barbell, but they were kind of partnering with Pendley, sure, and kind of doing some stuff. But he's done some incredible, really, really heavy lifts. So if he's on, I think it'll be one to watch for sure.
The 109's not really anything that stands out to me.
It's always fun to watch Ethan Herrick, power jerk.
Yeah. Let's see. The 109 pluses, same thing. Not really names that I'm familiar with or that I follow on Instagram or anything like that, but looks like some pretty good entry totals. And some close entry totals, so that'll probably be a good one to watch too. And then moving on to the women, the ones that I'm excited for, I don't think we're going to get to watch them, but like the 49s are going to have Alyssa Ritchie along with Haley Reichardt and Morgan King. And I think that'll be a good session. Those entry totals are pretty close. They're within 5 kilos of each other. And then I think the 55s are going to be kind of interesting too. I like that weight class for women. I think it's a good, like, solid weight class that we have built up right now. And Jordan De La Cruz is at the top right now with Power and Grace Performance at 198 entry total. I don't recognize a whole lot more names, but I've seen a few of the lifters throughout that list. But I think the 55s are going to be pretty interesting to watch. The 59s are another one that I like. Sarah Beth Jumper from Catalyst Athletics. She was at Nationals this past year and did pretty well. And she's at the top of the list, along with Taylor Turner from Vero Beach Weightlifting and Kyja Bramwell from Power and Grace Performance as well. And those also Christy Brewer, who got third place at Nationals, is also going to be in the mix there. So she's got a pretty close entry total to some of those ladies. And she's also a master's lifter. So,
we'll probably see some master's American records go down.
Yeah, that'll be a good one. The 64s.
Lots of 200 kilo totals.
Yeah, so three.
So it looks like that'll be pretty close. People going back and forth there. At 71.
Jordan Weikers is from Cal Strength. And she's somebody I haven't seen compete in a while. I don't know if she was injured. She might have been rehabbing for a little bit, but it'll be good to see her back on the platform. I've seen her lift before, and she's pretty outstanding lifter. The 71s is going to be a pretty good session. There's going to be Meredith Alwyn. She's unattached. And Alexandra LaChance from Team Juggernaut, as well as Aaron Andika from Catalyst Athletics. They're all pretty close. Well, except for Meredith Alwyn, she's up there. But I think they're going to be close for second and third.
Yeah, it'll be there's a handful that could go either way within that. At 76, of course, everybody's excited to see Maddie Rogers first meet with Catalyst Athletics.
Yeah.
So they've kind of helped her out at the AO2.
Yeah, I think Amy.
But this is her first meet. On their program with Amy Everett as her coach.
And Amy Everett's been coaching her remotely, and she's been Maddie's been working at Ape Squad Weightlifting in Florida through Catalyst Athletics and Amy Everett. So that'll be the first time that they actually get tested as a pair of coach and athlete under a new team and banner.
She's looking very, very strong.
Yeah, she is looking really strong. I saw her jerk 143.
Something along those lines, within
that range, pretty recently on Instagram, and that was pretty good. And she's also going to be probably followed up by Shakesha Johnson from Team Juggernaut and Nadine Pierre from Union Weightlifting. So that'll be a good session, I think. The 81s, Jenny Arthur's going to be competing, or at least she signed up to compete. We'll see if she actually does. And then Jesse Bradley, who I saw at the Olympic Training Center back in 2016 when she was a lot younger, training with Power and Grace Performance. She's up there with Jenny Arthur, so she's probably going to be vying for a medal spot too. So I think that'll be a pretty good session to watch. The 87s, Marissa Klingseis from Wesley Weightlifters is at the top of the session, probably along with our lifter Deanna McGillivray. So still a little bit outpaced by Marissa, but probably vying for those second and third spots between Chris and Erickson. She's from Philadelphia Barbell, and so there's also Samantha Jones in the mix with Laura Burrito from East Coast Gold. But there's some good totals that are packed right in there, so it looks like that'll be a tight race for that 87 category podium spots as well. So that'll be a good session to watch. And then the 87 pluses, we have Sarah Robles from Team Houston at the top. And then with Ash Marie Benitez from Coastal Empire Weightlifting. And a couple other names I don't recognize, but looks like totals are well above 240 for the top three. And then there's some other names in the mix that we want to see do well.
Yep,
especially Consuelo.
Especially Consuelo, yeah. So this is going to be a fun weekend. We'll be driving out this time, so we'll be leaving first thing in the morning Friday, and hopefully arriving in time to catch some of those lighter A sessions that we were talking about. But I think, it's looking like it's going to be a pretty good show out there. So tune into that live stream. Keep your eyes peeled for our lifters, and kind of tune in to watch the best of the best do what they do.
Yeah. So
this one matters for standing on world team, not the world team, but the Pan Am team, I think.
Pan Am team. It also gets them Roby points and ups their standing and stipends and things like that for like securing positions for future spots on international teams and things like that.
So who will be going to the Olympics will be decided over the next couple of meets. And this is one of those important ones that'll be kind of making sure that those things are pieced together. So what we thought we'd do today, now that we've kind of talked about the exciting events of next week, is that we wanted to revisit the topic that we had discussed when we had some audio issues a couple episodes back. So we're going to talk a little bit about volume training. We just wrapped up what you could call a volume training phase at the gym. And we thought we'd just kind of give a little bit of try to clear up any misconceptions or give a little bit of detail about that. So when you refer to something as like a volume cycle, it's sort of a misnomer because volume is present all the time. So all volume means is that it's your number of repetitions multiplied by the weight you lifted. And it can be expressed as reps per week or tonnage. Or just how much work you did as measured by like, you know, you did 15,000 kilos of work in this workout. So you can look at volume from a daily perspective, a weekly, or kind of monthly account. So when people say that they're doing a volume training program, that means that the primary variable you're manipulating is the workload or the total tonnage. So rather than focusing on bringing an increase every week on just the intensity. So say we did five doubles at 70, then five doubles at 75, and then five doubles at 80. That would be a weekly increase in intensity. But the volume, the total number of reps would stay the same. The volume would go up based on the number of the intensity, but it's not the primary mode of increase. So as a way of kind of thinking about, you know, building volume week to week, so say you did two sets of 10 in the first week, and then four sets in the second week, and then six sets in the third. So that's a big increase in volume.
Right.
The main reason for kind of building up the number of reps people are doing is what you would call kind of a specific physical preparation. And I mean, I guess a little bit of general, because if you're depending on how many single leg things you're doing. But building up the workload where you're doing a lot of high rep squatting, you're doing a lot of high rep lifts, you're doing a lot of high rep deadlifts. And that's essentially just to be trying to ramp up the amount of work that you can do. So if you're wanting to give yourself kind of a volume program, you're not really going to be straying outside of, you know, anything above 80%. And typically you're just trying to build up the number of reps that you can do and build up that work capacity. The purpose of that being when you get to doing heavier loads later on, you're accustomed to what is now a higher volume based on the increase in intensity. So you might not be doing as many reps, but you're conditioned to do a ton of work. So you're ready for those multiple heavy attempts. It's basically just building a solid foundation that the rest of the training program gets laid upon.
Yeah. So I think for the idea behind volume training is basically to just do what Grayson said, and that's build that base. And so by the time you get done doing, you know, a set of four, that last rep feels like the second rep on a heavy double. So like that foreign, that feeling isn't foreign to you once you encounter it. So you, the amount of effort and focus that you need to maintain on rep four is kind of the same that you would need to have on rep two of a heavier double. So like the idea is to push the weights consecutively along those lines of, you know, 70% range, and then start lowering the volume and increasing the intensity in that middle range of the phase of the training cycle. So what we're wanting to do is get you to that point without, you could, so that way you can do heavy doubles without being winded, or you can do a set of heavy doubles for more than one set. Like you, it's building that work capacity to be able to do more with less later on. And so hopefully your coach puts you through volume training to build that general physical preparedness for the heavier lifts that are going to wear you down a lot faster if you don't have that underlying base of physical preparedness, you know, laid out. So when we, I know doing 10s and doing 8s and even 5s kinds of sucks, and people complain about it, but there's a reason behind it. It's not just a sadistic way for us to try to torture you into doing a lot of work. It's actually trying to build a base for you to do heavier lifts later on down the road. And so some people don't realize that. They just see, oh, there's 10 squats and this is going to suck and it's going to be real hard. Yeah, it's going to be hard, but it's setting you up for the mental preparedness and physical preparedness to be able to lift single like rep lifts that are going to be heavy. They're going to feel like that 10th rep, you know, a one rep max back squat is going to feel like that 10th rep on your set of 10 that you're building up in the first couple of weeks. So like your body is going to be able to adjust based on how much of a base you built at the beginning of the cycle. So you're building for later. It's not just because we want to torture you or we want to see you suffer with a set of 10. There's an actual purpose to doing it.
Yeah. So you're kind of building up that psychological base of kind of knowing how to fight through a difficult feeling rep or right. Like accomplishing something that's really hard. Like maybe, you know, you hit a 15 kilo PR on your back squat and now we're asking for 70% for 10 and that's heavier than you've ever done for 10. And right. You got to do it 3 times. And you know, you kind of hit that nervous feeling, the butterflies in your stomach yeah. between sets. And that's kind of one of the benefits there. You're also physically building up, a structural base. So higher repetitions at lower weights, and then growing the number of repetitions week to week, does really favorable things for building up, and conditioning the joints, as well as, providing, kind of a muscle growth stimulus. So hopefully you're putting on a little bit of muscle, you're conditioning your joints to doing repeated yeah. work. And then once you're conditioned and ready to get into it, you're going to be able to build up to a higher degree, like you were saying.
Yeah. And I think that's another reason why volume training is important, because sometimes maximal effort lifts don't stimulate the same type of growth and adaptation that, you know, a higher volume does with the ligaments and tendons. So sometimes for those things to catch up and stay healthy, they need a little bit more stimulation than, you know, just a few snatches and clean and jerks. So if you're doing, you know, sets of 10 in the back squat, yes, they're going to be lower percentage, but the higher volume of them, your ligaments and tendons are going to have to make an adaptation too to that higher volume. So they're going to strengthen a little bit more. They're going to be a little more resilient so that when you do end up with those higher intensity lifts, the closer to the like doubles and singles, like your ligaments and tendons are going to be able to tolerate that load because they've built up along with everything else.
Yeah, and I think it's easy to there's a difference between the definition of the word volume, which would just be, you know, your rating of intensity, so your weight times reps times right. sets gives you your tonnage, and but there's a difference between that and how the word is commonly used. So commonly people are referring to you know, sets above 5 repetitions, you know, like when someone says, oh, I'm doing some high volume training, they mean that they're squatting and deadlifting 10s most of the time.
Yeah.
But high volume training can also be accomplished because, again, you're looking at tonnage overall. So sometimes a high volume workout could be 10 triples in a squat. So if you're yeah. doing 10 sets of 3 instead of 3 sets of 10, the total workload that you're going to be accumulating is the main factor that you're after. So if you're trying to put together a volume training plan, it's not necessarily that, you know, you have to do 10 reps at a time. It's you can accomplish the same thing by adding a lot more sets.
Right.
And the downfall of it, adding more sets, is just a time constraint. So, you know, it takes a very long time to get through 10 sets of 3, whereas opposed to 3 sets of 10, you can kind of not accumulate a significant amount of tonnage in a 30-minute squat workout instead of trying to accumulate a equivalent amount of tonnage doing triples for an hour and a half. So you can build volume in a lot of different ways. It doesn't have to be through high repetitions. It can be through an increase in your number of sets.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, like, where does the idea of a set of 10 come from? Like, why does it break down into sets of 10, 5, 3,
and then... Well, that's kind of an interesting idea.
Why that number, yeah.
Well, so typically, you know, people thought that in order to increase the size of a muscle, you had to basically work it to exhaustion or do longer sets, because people were seeing increases in musculature from that. But when they've done some of the studies, you can get a similar rate of hypertrophy just by adding more sets and keeping the weight a little higher. So I think that the 10s, the 10-5-3 is a really kind of funny and arbitrary scheme that kind of developed, where there's no reason that 3s are better than 4s or 6 or 5s right. are better than 6s.
Yeah.
It's just kind of developed as that's sort of how everyone's done it, so that's sort of how everyone continues to do it. And I think that, you know, the benefits that you get is, you know, doing, you know, 10 reps. So if you're thinking about, you know, tonnage adaptation, if you're looking for just like a pure muscle growth standpoint, maybe doing tons of 3s will get you the same muscle growth. But if you're kind of outpacing tendon development, because tendon development takes longer, it needs more time under load to start really strengthening those things. That's why things like wall sits and, you know, banded knee extensions, that sort of thing, is helpful for patellar tendonitis, because right. you just need that tendon under load for a long time to get it to start adapting in the way that you want or to heal. So where if you're looking for a hypertrophy stimulus or you're just wanting to build up your work capacity, you might be able to do a ton of sets, but there's always that chance that you're not giving your joints time to rest, because doing 10s allows you to train in a range that the weights are, you know, rather light from a maximal exertion standpoint, but it's still really difficult and you're getting a lot of good work in and spending a lot of time under the bar.
Yeah.
And I think that that's kind of how you should be thinking about it, is what's the purpose? So maybe, you know, if you want to keep your volume high, so maybe you start with, you know, your 10s and 8s in those first 3 weeks, but you can keep the volume really high just by then switching to more sets and then building up from there as you cut out sets and yeah. ramp up intensity. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. I think that the distinction between should you do 10s, 5s, or 3s, you can look at, you know, evidence that, you know, 10s will elicit some muscle growth, but if you do an equivalent amount of work, the rep schemes, I think that we could program 7s and everyone would still make progress. That it's just one of those, like,
it's just how ruts. It's laid out, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just it's an easy way to think of it, because it's, you know, you got high repetitions, that's 10. You got medium repetitions, that's 5.
Yeah.
And then you got low repetitions, that's 2 to 3. And I think that, you know, there's some utility there. Like, I personally like 5s because you can accumulate a ton of tonnage, but also be working with slightly with heavier weights than you okay. could for 10s, like a 5x5 versus a 3x10. You can usually build up some more tonnage because you're able to handle more work at the 5 rep range. But I don't know if, you know, 5x6 is any worse.
Well, I remember one squat part of a squat program, part of your overall program, but the squats in the program, the way I programmed it for you was It was like 4 reps, 7 reps, 9 reps or something like that.
Yeah.
But the percentage was the same. So basically you did 4 reps at 70% or let's say 60%. 4 reps at 60%, 7 reps at 60%, and then 9 reps at 60%, and then waves of that. So basically that was a way to get volume in and without increasing the intensity, but making it more difficult as the set went on.
Yeah, and that was a pretty fun way of just building up some work for the legs. So if you're you know, really trying to be an iconoclast, you could put a whole program together where you're only doing sevens and fours, and I think that people would still make great progress. But I think there's just something about well, I guess not even numbers, but there's something kind of familiar about fives and threes and tens. Yeah. Like there's just enough of it out there, and it's been around for so long that it's kind of just made its way into the back of everyone's mind, and that's just sort of where things kind of come from. But I don't know if there's any, you know, like is 11 better than 10?
Yeah, because I know in bodybuilding, like 3 sets of 8 seems to be a common like rep scheme too, like 3 sets of 8 bicep curls, or you know, lat pull downs, things like that, like hamstring curls, leg extensions. Like you'll do 3 sets of 8 and then a bunch of different exercises, just destroying one body part in that type of rep scheme.
Yeah, and then typically, you know, you'll see bodybuilders advance some of those rep schemes out to, you know, sets to failure,
right, or to failure,
15
yeah.
to 20 reps. And the reason for that is when you're putting together, so let's say if we're using volume training and hypertrophy training synonymously.
Right.
If you're doing it for weightlifting performance, you want your hypertrophy adaptations to come from increasing the size of the muscle fibers. So the contractile unit of the muscle gets thicker, and that's one source of muscle hypertrophy. And that's kind of accomplished in that, 10 rep, 5 rep, 8 rep, that kind of range, maybe up to 12, where you're providing enough mechanical stimulation that the absolute strength is what's getting fatigued.
Yeah.
Now, when you stretch those rep schemes out into that 15 to 30, a lot of what's happening is it's not that the muscle is too weak, it's that the endurance factor is there. So when you're training to failure, you're exhausting all of your muscle's energy supplies, which is, you know, that glucose stored in the muscle.
Okay.
And one of the adaptations to doing kind of those really fatiguing long sets is that the amount of fluid in the muscle is increased. So you can get hypertrophy from the muscle fiber, or you can get hypertrophy from an increase in volume within the cell. So like there's more liquid within the cell. There's an adaptation that is to store more glucose in the muscle cell. So you're able to, that's why you see people kind of like slam carbs while they're training and just like get massive pumps.
Sure.
So one of the mechanisms for that is that you're increasing how much glucose is stored in the muscle, and you're increasing how much water is just naturally in the muscle.
Okay.
And that's going to add muscle size. But when you're running a weightlifting program, you don't really care about muscle size. You care about thickness of the muscle fiber. So doing lots of pump sets might make that muscle grow, but it won't necessarily make that muscle stronger.
Okay.
So when you're writing a hypertrophy program or adding volume to your training, you want to keep it where you're not using 5-pound dumbbells to make your deltoids look really big, but that you're using enough weight that you're getting a strength style hypertrophy where you're increasing the contractile units rather than increasing the fluid in the muscle, because that's just going to be extra weight you have to cut later.
Right. Yeah,
so and you want contractile hypertrophy.
Right, and so that's why weightlifters a lot of the time can be so strong in such a small weight class, is that they've built up this amazing amount of strength and contractile ability in that body frame without being super big. And so what we want to avoid is this bulkiness for the sake of bulkiness. Like that extra bulk is going to have to be cut down to maintain a specific weight class. So the idea is to be strong without adding a whole lot of extra bulk to your frame. Like, yes, we want to be strong. We want to be, you know, big in our weight class, but we don't want to be, just bloated. Like, there's a difference.
Yeah, and then, you know, there's even, like, once you're at a certain point, like, you, of course you want to add as much muscle as you can to your frame, mm-hmm. because that gives you a greater potential for strength. But just increasing the size of the muscle negates almost what I would say is maybe more than half of how strong you are, which is the neural component. So a lot of times it's how well you can fire certain muscles, and right. strength is in large part is a neural thing. So it's conditioning your body to be able to contract more muscle fibers. So that's how you can have, you know, two people, you know, who are either the same amount of kind of muscle mass, but mm-hmm. one is substantially stronger. And that's a lot to do with the neural aspect of how many units can you contract all at once? Okay. How many times have you done that pattern? Like, what's that strength increase? Is less tied to just how big your muscles are. We've all met people that look really big but aren't really big.
Yeah.
Or aren't really strong.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And I think that so that's why you should follow those hypertrophy phases up with something that is working on the neural advantages of strength, because right. you can snatch sets of four all day and clean and, you know, squat tens and do tens for deadlifts, and your back will get bigger, your legs will get bigger. But if you never then go after some of those neural adaptations of, okay, well, now that I've got this increased muscle size, now you have to teach it to contract harder. And okay. that's where, you know, those subsequent phases in training come in, where you kind of move from that hypertrophy phase into doing some more pure strength work,
right.
and then translating that pure strength work into explosive power. So you got to have these phases set out so that you're kind of not, you don't want to go through your training without ever trying to build some new muscle, because you always want to be as lean as you can in your weight class.
Right.
If it contracts, then it's more beneficial to be a little leaner and a little more muscular in your weight class.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't just treat it like, if I have the biggest muscles, I'll lift the most weight, because right. there's a whole other component that comes into that. And yeah, I think doing lighter, higher rep snatches is really good for technique work.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're never challenging those positions with more weight, you're never going to make the technical neural adaptations that allow you to be faster under the bar
yeah.
or snatch a heavier weight. So it's a really important phase of training, but it's one of those things that you don't need to be too relentless on. Like, visiting it for a month or two every now and then, you know, every other cycle, visiting some tens, and then maybe building up volume at heavier weights via more sets, depending on what phase of training you're in. So I think that we should have these periods where we're doing lighter weights for higher reps as a way to take a break and let the body rest and recover and put down some new tissue. But the majority of your time should be spent, you know, really focusing on strength and power, and then just taking these steps back to get in good enough shape that you can continue to develop your strength and power. Because I think we've all been to the end of a cycle where doubles are winding.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh man, I need to get back in shape. And
yeah.
It's so doing higher rep squats is a really good way to just kind of get yourself back in shape to handle another cycle of work.
Okay. All right. I think that covers what the bulk of what we talked about last time we were visiting the volume stuff. And like we said, we just finished the volume phase. We're moving a little bit away from it now toward the middle of the phase. We're going to start heading in toward a competition peaking cycle. For January, we got a big meet that we're probably going to end up participating in, bringing a lot of lifter to for that. So we're moving away from that volume, getting away from like all those reps into the mid range of, you know, threes and fives and things like that for what we're going to be doing here in the next portion. But yeah, so it's something that your coach is using to build up your work capacity, build up your strength, build up your neurological adaptations. But it's not torture, folks. It's not, you know, I'm not
programming tens because it's fun for me. It's to help you out. It's to make you stronger, to build a base for later on. So just keep that in mind. Like, when it's hard and you're trying to get through that set of 10, it's building for down the road. It's not for now. It's for down the road.
Yeah, yeah. So try to stay motivated. It's not everybody's favorite time. I'm kind of masochistic, and I kind of love doing high rep squatting. I think it's really fun to see how jello-y your legs can get, and I kind of get a little bit of a thrill out of that. But I don't know if that's just a personal problem. So I think that what I wanted to kind of talk about toward the end here is just hearing about people fighting each other in stores for Black Friday, and kind of just generally, I have a really big problem with this. Like, what do you think it is that makes people sit around and just wait in lines and look forward to sales? You know, like, what is it to camp out in front of a Best Buy to get a new TV? Like, what's the drive that people have? Like, what do you think the underlying like rationale is? Because to me, there's just no world that I care about almost anything enough to sit out in front of a store for like 12 hours and, well, it's cold outside, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot of things that I'm gonna fight somebody over for, you know. It's like, if I saw somebody breaking into my truck, I might yell at them to stop, but I'm not going to get into a fist fight over like somebody doing that, much less like in a store where like you're looking for a good deal. And I think that's part of it, is they're just trying to get the best deal possible, right? They're trying to get the most things for the least amount of money, and in a way that motivates people to be their worst selves. Like, I don't understand it. Like, I'm not going to fight you for a 55-inch TV that's $200. Like, I'm not going to trample anybody. I'm not going to wait in line. Like, I just have zero interest in doing that. I don't participate in any Black Friday stuff. Maybe Cyber Monday is a little more reasonable, but like, I'm not going to go wait in line outside of a Best Buy for 8 hours to get an Xbox 360 for $100 less. Like, it doesn't appeal to me at all. And I don't know if it's because like people feel that that's the only way they can get those things, or if it's just they're motivated by the fact that they can get something that they can't normally get for less, and they just have to do this thing, like wait in line or be extra aggressive in achieving, like getting that thing off the shelf. Like, I don't even know, like, because the day before is Thanksgiving, right? So the whole idea of Thanksgiving is to be grateful for the things in your life, be grateful for the people in your life, be grateful for, you know, your family, your ability to provide for yourself, to provide food for everybody at the table. And then sometimes 3 hours later, they're standing in line at Target to get, you know, this electronic item that they probably don't even need anymore. Like, I don't understand it. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I think it's really funny looking at the juxtaposition between a day where you're supposed to be, you know, like you said, grateful for the things that you have, and then immediately following that up with an urge to fill your life with more things.
Right, yeah.
And I think that, you know, it's obviously a really successful advertising strategy. It's been put, like, Black Friday is now like a worldwide phenomenon where it's just, this is the day of the year that we have the most sales.
Yeah.
And I really think that part of it is that people equate having more stuff with being more fulfilled. I think that people always want to improve their standing, and people always want to improve their comfort in life. But I think that a lot of times people mistakenly think that having more things is going to make them happier.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the opposite, where I think that the default human state is to be wanting more, and that's kind of the default pattern that the brain is in. You're always looking for the next thing. So an analogy that I really like is, say you got a new car, right? And it's your dream car and you love it. But after a few weeks, it's just your car, and you want a new, and you find a new car that you want.
Yeah.
And then you fantasize about that car. And once you get it, you're happy for a little while. But after a while, it's just, that's just my car.
It's just your car. Yeah.
So I think all of that is, you know, people are looking for that fleeting momentary happiness of, man, check out the color on this new TV. Let's rewatch all of the Disney Plus movies over and over again.
Right.
And it's serving as a distraction from people from something. Like they're trying to fill a gap with things rather than, you know,
something
that lasts.
Well, I think that part of it is some people give the excuse of, oh, I'm doing this as Christmas shopping for other people. So, like, if they're putting that effort in to say, well, I'm getting this gift for so-and-so. So, like, they're excited for that part of it. That's the part that might bring them joy, is like, oh, I'm getting this thing for somebody else. But in reality, that person's going to be more excited about just opening the present, just being, like, in that situation than probably what you got them anyway. And then that thing's going to sit in their house, especially if it's something that, you know, is gimmicky, or like clothing is another thing. Like clothing, a lot of times people will get you clothes. Grandma will get you clothes. Your parents will get you clothes. And that stuff just sits because you didn't pick it out yourself. They picked it for you. They thought it would be something that you like. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'll wear this all the time. You wear it once and then it sits in the closet for the rest of the year. So stuff like that just ends up in, you know, Goodwill or Big Brothers Big Sisters, or in a pile of clothes being burned in Zimbabwe, you know, and just contributing to the climate change environment of burning more fossil fuels, because a lot of clothes are just made from plastic, or they're made from like materials that can't be recycled. You know, they just sit somewhere. So,
well, like, and that's what's so interesting is that, you know, it, even people who, you know, say that they want to, you know, live a more sustainable life, and
right,
that we need to start, you know, figuring out how to, you know, keep the world in better health as from an ecological perspective, are the exact same people that are running out to buy more plastic crap. You know, there's some cognitive dissonance there, where we're all so convinced that we need to buy the next thing. Like there's a new iPhone every year, but you
right
know, like is your life that much better because you have three cameras now?
Yeah, your, like, camera is just like a more HD, like you're just picking up everybody's freckles on your video now, like your
weightlifting video. It just seems like it's such a waste of things to worry about. There's just so many better things to be spending your time doing. And if you want to really see like the worst of people, is just look at how people behave in parking lots.
Oh yeah. Oh, for
like,
sure.
That even if they're there, you know, like, oh, I need to go get, you know, presents for the nieces and nephews or whatever it is that you're doing, like they let that serve as a way to just be rude and awful to everybody.
Yeah.
Like if you want to see just a bunch of really miserable people obsessively trying to spend as much money as possible, just watching the mall parking lot is just a nightmare.
Yeah, that's and always like my least favorite things to have to do, is if like if there's any reason to go to the mall from November 20 or what 25th to December 25th, like that month before Christmas, like the mall is just ridiculous parking wise, like, and it's packed all the time, and you just see people in there just buying everything, like, just,
and mistreating the people that work at the stores, you know, like everybody's rude, what do you mean you're out of this?
Yeah, exactly.
Like I think it really brings out the worst greediness in people
for a holiday that's supposed to be about giving and kindness and enjoying family and just spending time with people you love. There really is this ugly side of it. That's the retail side. And I think that companies drive that behavior because of the way they cater to people's greed for wanting things during this time of year.
Oh yeah, I mean they've been tricking us forever. Yeah. You know, there's the thing about, you know, advertising like toys to kids, and like just from the time that you're brought up, you're told that you need more stuff.
Yeah.
And that, like, oh man, I wish I was as happy as those guys all drinking Bud Light in the back of their truck in that commercial. Maybe if I buy Bud Light, all my friends will like me again, and they'll forget how rude I've been to everybody over the last 2 years. So yeah, you've kind of got these, you know, things that are kind of forced into our heads, these ideas that you need a new thing. If something's worn out, you can't just keep using it. You gotta get the new thing. Even if there's nothing wrong with your computer, ooh, there's a fancy new one with an extra large screen.
Yeah.
Like, you're always looking to improve these things, and the reality is that it's really not making any of us any happier to be continually improving those things. So I think that trying to find the right level of having the things that you need and having, you know, a few of those kind of luxury items where it's like, I don't need this, but I like it. But I think that if you're constantly upgrading and constantly chasing it, you have to look at like what's motivating you to want 45 pairs of shoes. What's motivating you to constantly be upgrading your phones? Is it status? Are you letting Apple dictate your social standing by what phone you have? Like, there's all kinds of these like parasitic kind of corporate agenda kind of things that it's just kind of forcing people to behave in a certain way. And I think that trying to take a step back and realize that you're being manipulated.
Yeah.
And even if you want to stick with, you know, the tradition, because I mean, yeah, you can get good deals on stuff, but just recognize the fact that you've been manipulated into wanting to shop.
Yeah.
And that it might not actually be, just are you making those decisions, or are they just kind of getting planted in your head via radio advertisements or what's popping up in your Instagram feed?
Yeah, I think that some of the best gifts that I've ever received were just made by people. I think one of the coolest gifts I ever received from a friend was a knife that a person made by hand. So the handle, the blade itself was sharpened by an individual. Like, it wasn't bought, it was just handmade. And then obviously, like, when children give you anything, you just have to realize that they don't have any money. That's all they can offer you. And sometimes that picture of stick figures with the sun in the corner is the most that they have to offer, and that's all that they can give. And it's given freely and with their time and effort. So sometimes, like, if you look at it, you know, that little sculpture they made out of clay or that drawing that they made is the most that they can give you. So like, those things are real meaningful to them. So if, when you just throw them away or put them in a corner somewhere, like, how insulting is that? Like, but like, some of the best things that you can give to people, I think, can be a handmade gift. It can be, you know, something that's more personal than just something that you bought at Best Buy or Bed Bath & Beyond or, you know, Bath & Body Works.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, you know, I think looking at, you know, like you said, what kids will give is probably better in the spirit is, you know, hey, this made me think of you and I carved you this weird sharpened stick.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, cool, you sharpened a stick and gave it to me. I'm going to put that right over.
Yeah.
But like, the idea of, you know, it's not that, you know, the idea of gift giving is what's problematic. It's what those gifts should be and how important material things are for your status.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's what I have a problem with is, you know, the thought that, you know, the kind of car you have dictates the kind of person you are.
Right.
Or the, you know, oh, I'm the techie guy, so I need to have all the latest this and that. And I think that, I don't know, people... There's better things to be worried about, and there's better things to be spending your time on, in my opinion.
Yeah, I guess, like, the way I look at it is I'd rather have or spend money on experiences, you know, with people and doing something than getting something. Like, for instance, I'd rather go on a weekend trip snowboarding with my daughter than get something from her that's, you know, I probably could have bought for myself with, you know, three times over. Like, whatever she can get me, like, I'm able to purchase for myself. I would rather spend time with her, like, more than anything. So, like, it's not, for me, it's not a matter of, like, anything that I want, I could probably get it, you know, in some way or another. Like, I'm an adult. I have means of acquiring things. But for me, it's more important to spend time with her or spend time with my family than it is to just get things from them. Like, I'd rather have the experience of being with them and doing something with them than getting something from them.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, as we get through this yearly phase of commercials shoving objects down your throat, just try to take more time to, you know, be around the people that you want to be around and focus less on whether you need a new smart TV or an upgrade on,
or Tickle Me Elmo.
Yeah, you know, all of those things. You know, material objects are temporary and they're not worth as much attention as they get.
Yeah. And that's just a thought, like, and it's just our opinion about, like, how the holiday season lumps consumerism into the holiday. So, you know, just take it for what it is. It's a holiday to spend time with your family. It's a holiday to spend time with people you want to be around and enjoy being around. And if you're able to give them something, give it to them, like, with your time and effort. It doesn't necessarily have to be this thing that you have to get for them, because that thing could end up sitting in a corner in 2 weeks anyway.
Yeah, I mean, well, I just, the one last kind of thought on that is, every time that you're struck by, oh, I need to get, you know, these new clothes, or I need to get this XYZ appliance or game.
Sure.
Look around your house at all the stuff that you aren't using. There's a really good chance that thing that you think you want is just going to be one of those unused items laying around your house. And one thing that I saw this week that I really liked was, you know, all of that clutter in your house that you aren't using used to be money, and all of your money is your time. Money is a representation of how much time you've put into something. So if you're kind of wasting, you know, your money on things that you're not using rather than experiences with people, and you know, you're kind of wasting your time if you think about your money as being a measure of your time.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's definitely one way to look at it. And just some things to consider before you start heading out for your holiday shopping and things like that. And just maybe consider making a gift. Like, if you have a talent, if you can draw, if you're able to paint, maybe you're a good writer, you can write out a favorite passage of a book and frame it for somebody. In calligraphy, if you're able to do that. If you know an instrument, learn a song and play it for your family on Christmas. Just different ways to approach it. It doesn't always have to be things, folks. You know, it doesn't always have to be, you know, whatever's the latest and greatest. It can be something from the heart too.
Yeah, absolutely. So don't do what the corporate overlords want. Be your own person, make your own gifts. And until next time, guys, live with no regrets.
All right. Catch you later, y'all.